Film Nerds Unlimited. Lo-fi movie conversations with high-quality movie connoisseurs.
Issue 114.
Matt Scalise, editor of FilmNerds.com. Ben Stark of Wonder Mill Films.
Matt, it is 11:30, I literally am like leaving the parking lot of the movie theater after seeing Captain America: Civil War, and you watched it this evening as well, correct?
Yep.
All right, and right off the bat, we are going to spoil basically a bunch of stuff in this movie. We probably won't go in depth because it's 11:30 at night, and I'm
right.
A grown adult. We won't go super in-depth, but we will spoil anything and everything for the sake of a good conversation. So let's just throw that out there. So I'll ask you what you thought about the movie, and then you ask me what I thought about the movie.
So here's the thing. There's so much to spoil. And I think that's what one of the things that leaves me so happy about this experience is they really did, as much as it feels like they showed in promoting this movie, they really did a great job of keeping a lot of big surprises hidden. And I mean, you would have to have really been looking for it to have some of these things spoiled for you, I think. And man, there were so many moments. I said earlier on Twitter tonight that this is the most fun that I've had at a superhero movie. And I just think there were so many moments. I really haven't had a chance to kind of like think about, really like break down, you know, does it all work? Does it all fit together? So far, just the raw experience of it for me was just this sequence of super fun moments, one after the next. And, you know, they landed so effectively. I mean, my crowd was really, really enthusiastic. And we had at least three moments that I can think of where there was, like, outright cheering and applause to the point where I missed the line. And, I mean, and it was great. I didn't mind it at all because I just loved being in a theater where, like, that many people were having that much fun with some of this.
Yeah, I mean, I definitely agree with you. There's so many moments, and they come so fast that it's almost hard to process. This is a movie, you know, filled to the brim, and especially there's a kind of last, the end of the second act has the big blowout fight between all the superheroes. And that alone, you know, has so many little bits of it that are so memorable. And it's hard to, like you said, it's hard to process, it's hard to walk out of the theater and process. But I got to say, man, like as a collection of moments, I had an absolute blast. But like you said, everything added together, I can't help but feel disappointed. I feel like...
No kidding, really?
Yeah, there's something about this movie that I think that my big fear of a Captain America movie being robbed of its central core by, you know, this injection of all of these other superheroes, I think that fear is pretty well founded. And I think that it's primarily the case because there's a few emotional things going on in this movie that take a back seat to some really fun moments. But at the end of the day, a lot of the motivations and a lot of the kind of final act beats, they leave me more than just like, oh, well, that could have been fleshed out more. They kind of bum me out. Like, there's actually stuff in this movie that I really don't know. I can't see I can see why it's constructed for future sequels, but I don't see it as constructive to the characters or instructive of the characters that they've set up.
Well,
to this point. And I don't think, I think that the central, honestly, the central conflict of the movie isn't solved. And I think that might be what, I think that might be my biggest sticking point, is that the plot is so contingent on this one conflict, and it really, it's basic, the can has been kicked down the road, and that's pretty, if once I say that out loud, that's kind of infuriating.
Well, look, I see where you're coming from on all of this, but I'm going to disagree with you on how it all lands for me, and I'll tell you this. I mean, because these were things that I'm thinking about watching the movie. I mean, it definitely is a movie that is much more concerned with telling the story of the Avengers than it is of just Cap. Although Cap is, you know, obviously instrumental, and his personal arc is what drives the whole thing. I mean, none of the conflict happens unless, you know, Cap's motivations are coming into play. But I will say this, I mean, because you brought up a lot of things, but I can't argue with you that this movie focuses more on the bigger picture than it does on Captain America. But, I mean, it's an Avengers movie. I think I have to say that. But I'm not going to call that a negative here, because I really love what happens with the entire
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that in and of itself is a negative.
No, I get what you're saying.
Because it's the nature of especially this franchise, and I'm fine with that.
Now, yeah.
I just feel like we've lost other things.
I don't think that it doesn't solve it, because I when I get to the end of this movie, the thing that immediately hits me is that a new status quo is established in the Marvel Cinematic Universe by as a result of this conflict. And what it is that, because look, at no point in this movie, I don't know, there may be a point or two, but like for the most part, from the beginning and at the end, Tony Stark and Steve Rogers understand each other. And that's part of why they're so frustrated with this whole thing, is because they do respect each other and almost love each other, and they just can't get the other one. I mean, Tony mostly is where the frustration is. He just can't get Steve to play ball. And, you know, they both have perfectly good reasons for what they're wanting to do, and their hearts are in the right place. And I think, ultimately, the villain's aim is also very smart and very clever, and his scheme draws upon things from previous movies that are, I think, really well done. I mean, I noticed, I'll just throw it in there, but like the car crash, which is a huge thing in this movie, it is like a second and a half mention in The Winter Soldier. And I remember, I mean, I watched it again this week, but I remember watching it going like, huh, like, I wonder if there's any implications to that. I wonder if they're setting something up with that. And I think they definitely were. And I think it all pays off really well here, because they are, the entire arc of this movie is really driving this all towards that we have to have the Avengers be, you know, underground, that they're off the books. And I think, you know, the it's all set up in this movie that's where it's going by the Spider-Man scene, which we'll get to in a second. But I mean, the dialogue that happens in that scene is basically telling you what this movie thinks is the right way to do it, which is they can't have a big giant SHIELD organization anymore. You can't do that, and it's going to lead to bad things, and they have to just be vigilante superheroes. And I love that that's where it is at the end of this movie. I really enjoy it.
It's, I guess my frustration is, it's so similar to the feeling I had after The Dark Knight Rises, which is a movie that I ended up loving after repeat viewings, and that can always happen. A movie can get worse or better or stay the same on repeat viewings, but at the end of The Dark Knight Rises, spoilers for that movie, Batman is not Batman anymore. And we've seen, between three movies, we've seen all the Bruce Wayne as Batman, where we're going to see from that iteration of Batman. And I think there's still some people that are frustrated about that because it's so limited. And I guess, I don't know.
But there's no limit here. Like,
but there is a limit because the Avengers, the way that we traditionally know them, have now only existed for the end of the first movie and then most of the second movie and then probably some time in between that, and that's it.
I disagree with you, though. I think that if you look at the end of this movie, there's only two of them that aren't. I would say that the Avengers are the outlaw band that is going to be running around
but
with
Steve
Rogers.
The Avengers.
The Avengers.
It's not the the platonic ideal or whatever of the Avengers.
It's not.
The Avengers are the superheroes of the Marvel universe that everybody is on board with and loves. It'd be like making a Superman movie where Clark Kent is not in existence, you know, or it'd be like a Fantastic Four movie where they're all criminals or something like that. And I don't know. That's a stupid frustration to have, and I guess that's what I expect my superhero movies to do, which is to, you know, take my characters to an interesting place. It's just a little frustrating that, I don't know, it just seems like there's so much that happens between these movies, and then we kind of tune in for the movies for the big status quo shifting stuff. Like, sometimes I just want to see the status quo for a movie.
I know, but these are movies, though. I get where you're coming from, but I think that we aren't, you know, that's comic books. I mean, you're going to get 100 issues in between events.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, and that's
but we're not going to get that here.
Yeah, that's kind of stupid. Like, you know what I'm saying? Like,
here's the thing. I think I look at this too.
I don't read comic books for the events. You know, I read them for the two to three issue story arc that is very effective and tells a story from beginning
right.
to end.
Right.
And the fact that you're telling me that I'm not going to get that and I'm just going to get the big crossover events where I have to buy all the issues and waste a bunch of money on an issue of Hawkeye.
Well, you're not going to get them together. I mean, look, that's what these other movies are for. But and to speak to that, by the
what
way,
other
really
movies?
Quickly.
What do you mean?
So look, this is basically an Avengers movie, and I get that
okay,
you're frustrated about that.
Yeah.
But we're also about to go on a big run of movies here that when you get to the end of this movie, you realize, like, first of all, we're not even going to be in the realm where we would even be hearing about the Avengers for several more movies, because we're about to have Doctor Strange, and then we're going to go Guardians of the Galaxy, and then it'll probably come up again in Spider-Man, I'm guessing. And then you get a Thor movie. So, like, there's going to be a big gap of time where we're not seeing what's happening.
Well,
and
I can't wait to see the Doctor Strange movie so that I can anticipate the second Doctor Strange movie that he won't even be in at this rate.
This is really weird that you've, like, all your entire enthusiasm about the MCU has become unraveled.
I'm kind of working myself into a shoot here. So it's, again, I at the end of the day, it's a fantastically fun and enjoyable movie, but it's just the story mechanics. Again, I feel like at the beginning of the movie, the central conceit, I'm spreading my frustrations kind of all over the place. I'm okay with there being a bunch of Avengers in this movie. I'm okay with that. The central tension of the movie, which is that there's this thing that everybody needs to sign to be superheroes, or that Bucky needs to be brought to justice. I feel like the movie can't decide which of those is Captain America's true conflict, because they're not tied together in any sort of direct way. And at the end of the movie, they're kind of competing, and at the end of the movie, neither one is solved. Bucky isn't brought to justice. He's basically he's where he was at the beginning of the last movie, and the superhero registration act and whatever, the Sokovia Accords, those are still out there and unsigned and deliberated. And so,
but they won't be signed. That look, I disagree with you that nothing gets accomplished in this movie, because first of all, Bucky is a totally different person at the end of this movie. He has come out of the zombie, you know, trance that he was in that had turned him into a bad guy. And a big part of this movie and why Steve Rogers was, you know, had to split off from everybody else is because he had this experience in the last movie that made him believe that Bucky Barnes was not actually a villain and that something else was going on. And, you know, that combined with his loyalty to the guy, you know, made him want to go about it a different way than everybody else wanted to go about it. And
yeah, that's one movie. And then there's this other movie that's the Civil War movie. Like, you see what I'm saying? Like, those two things are so...
You don't think that's connected to the idea that, like, these heroes... I mean, the whole reason Steve Rogers doesn't want to sign it is because he wants to be able to make, you know...
wants to be able to make choices.
He wants to
be
able to
accountable
use his
for
own
his own
judgment.
Choices.
He wants to be able to use his judgment when they find out pieces of information like Tony does in the middle of the movie to go and act on them. And, you know, again, that's all underscored by Spider-Man's scene where he says, you know, the thing that he regrets the most and the things that he's the most scared of is not acting, because not acting means that somebody, you know, something happened that shouldn't have happened. And so, you know, I can't sit here and tell you, I'd have to think more about it to come up with a sort of global application for it. But within the structure of this movie, all of those values make sense. I can't really tell you what I think they're trying to comment on in the bigger world because I haven't thought.
Yeah,
about
no,
yet.
I don't need that. I mean, at this point, the world they built is bigger than the actual world that exists around us. So, commenting on the Marvel Cinematic Universe is actually matters more than commenting on the universe proper. There is a lot going on here, and I'm unable to process it, and I'm in total, like, gobsmacked awe of the Russo brothers, and obviously it's two guys, but for them and Christopher Marcus and Stephen McFeely to navigate all of this in a cohesive way and to not just make a giant mess of it all, that is amazing, because there is so much stuff going on here, not just thematically, but also character-wise and obviously visually.
Let me steer you away from the big picture of this movie and ask you about a couple of individual things. Let's compartmentalize here.
Okay.
So look, we have a new Spider-Man. What are your thoughts?
Bro, oh my God. Like the second it said Queens on the screen, I was like, oh, right. I, like, totally forgot that Spider-Man was going to be in this movie. And then every beat after that until he was asked politely to go to his own movie. every beat up to that point was perfect with him, with the Empire Strikes Back joke and the way they figured out the eyes and how the eyes are animated. Like, all of that stuff is just... it's perfect, and it makes me so happy that he's where he should be, and I think the interplay here is actually, I mean, I think everything about this is better than the Civil War comic book, I will say that, and I think that the interplay between Robert Downey Jr. and Tom Holland is fantastic, and that relationship of them together is not just great. I think it's better than their relationship in the Mark Millar series, but I think it's also kind of, I'm not reading the current comics, but it seems a little bit reminiscent of that, where, you know, Tony Stark is Peter Parker's kind of science hero. And I love that. So yeah, everything about Spider-Man is great. In fact,
and the jokes about Aunt May being too young and attractive.
We're fun too. It's excellent, and it takes it in such a direction. Like as soon as you realize that she's going to be in a scene with Robert Downey Jr., you think, oh, well, there you go. That totally
right.
justified that in all of that decision making. And I'll just go ahead and ruin your line of questioning here.
Okay.
And expand this moment, and I'll say that basically the movie from the moment that we see the Queen's title card to when Rhodey gets shot down, that right there is like, it's perfect and it's amazing. And it feels like kind of a different movie than the movie that about the Russian assassin that murders an old couple. It just seems it's a tonal shift, but it's wonderful. It's fantastic. It's all fun. And everything that you ask me about in that section, I'm going to gush about.
Yeah. Well, I'm going to keep asking you about that stuff, but yeah.
It's just that section.
But,
the giant man moment, it blew my mind.
That's where I was going next, yeah.
Yeah, giant, oh man.
I really, obviously had sort of suspected at some point that they might do that, but I had not seen a single screenshot or heard anybody talk about that moment, and it was stupid fun. It was really ridiculous, and everything they did with Scott Lang was funny to me.
Yeah, absolutely. I think he's one of the highlights in the movie.
The other thing to hit on here is so one moment where the audience really just went nuts in my theater was when we first hear the name Peter said in the Spider-Man introduction scene. The other moment is when Black Panther appears in costume for the first time. And
yeah.
I really think that this is going to, I mean, again, I mentioned it in the thread and all I have is anecdotal evidence. The makeup of my audience in my theater was different than what I have seen at previous Marvel movies that I have gone to. And I really think that Marvel not only just did such great service to this Black Panther character, but I think they marketed it well too. And I think that this movie is going to be a big hit with Black audiences. I think there's a lot for everybody to like, but I really feel like there was an energy in my theater whenever he was on screen.
I mean, I definitely think that he's going to be a popular character, and I think the way that Marvel makes movies, I don't think you're suggesting this, but I don't think there's a strategy there. I think that
I think
the
it just
appeal,
worked out that way.
Yeah, I don't know. I'd say, yeah, maybe. The appeal is pretty universal, and I think everything about him, as far as I can tell in this movie, has been masterfully crafted, and I cannot wait for Ryan Coogler's story with just that character. And I think Chad Boseman just is fantastic. It's, I don't know, maybe like once or twice, you know, the accent kind of was a little slipped a little bit, and I could say the same for Elizabeth Olsen. That kind of caught my ear a few times.
That's a little bit of a hammy Russian accent. Yeah.
When it's a Russian accent at all, like mid sentence, it just kind of goes away.
It's a little like Natasha from Rocky and Bullwinkle.
I think they may be going like the Halle Berry Storm route, where they're just going to like not so gracefully phase it out, and then it's eventually she's like, I took some classes. Now I speak like this.
I do like Elizabeth Olsen, though, by the way, and
she's really good.
I think that they did more for her character in this movie, and I think they actually bothered to sort of like differentiate her and Black Widow in this movie, that they're different characters now.
Yeah, and I think that playing up the fact that she's younger and making her the kid that the parents are arguing over, I think is great, because it's the it's kind of the way that Spider-Man was in the comic book. You know, it's this younger character that needs to be protected, but also needs to be guided. And Captain America and Iron Man have different opinions on how that's supposed to happen. So yeah, I think honestly, I think every member of the cast,
yeah,
was really well served, except for, and for the most part, she was extremely well served. But I think Black Widow kind of disappeared from the movie, and I can't tell you where she ended up.
She has less to do than anybody else in this movie. Though, you know, I think probably they get away with it a little bit because we spent so much time with her in The Winter Soldier that we understand already that she has some dynamics with Captain America that are different than all the other characters. And so I think, again, her sort of payoff moments, I don't think have to be set up as much because there was already a whole other movie that was basically Black Widow and Captain America.
I'm actually asking you, where did she end up? Was her last scene when she confronted Tony and he said that they're going to take her away?
Yeah, her last scene basically is her and Tony at the Avengers complex, and she's sort of...
But she's not in the raft with the other Avengers, so...
No, she won't. My impression was that she's probably fine. Yeah,
she's fine.
She's not gonna be taken to jail. I think
he said they were taking her to jail.
I don't know.
They're gonna come for you because you helped. You helped them get away.
Yeah, she'll probably disappear. She'll probably do that thing.
They couldn't have one shot of her like in an alley putting a hoodie on.
I mean, I think at the end of the movie, it's pretty clear that there's basically only two people who are on board with. Who are not sort of rogue, and it's Tony and the sentient robot that he made.
Oh, wait, are you talking about Vision or are you talking about Don Cheadle?
Talking about Vision. I forgot about Don Cheadle for a minute.
Yeah, a lot of people do, unfortunately.
Well, look, he's not gonna be in action, it appears, for a bit. So
I thought he was dead. Like that moment.
You know,
honestly, do you
think they should have killed him?
I kind of think they should have killed him.
Yeah,
because
there's that
moment where he's in the CAT scan thing and he's kind of looking around where I was like, what? Oh, well, what?
Well, they said he had a heartbeat still.
Yeah, that's true. I didn't catch that, I don't think.
Well, I think
it would have been a little bit much for him to have died and then also Tony to find out that his parents had been murdered by Captain America's childhood friend.
That would have been a bit rough on Tony. But... So, one more thing to hit on here too. I mean, you mentioned all the characters, but like again, I every time I get a movie now, where after such a weak debut, after I really hated him in his first two appearances, Hawkeye is freaking awesome in this movie. I really love everything they do with him. And I'm like hoping against hope that somehow Hawkeye gets some kind of solo material. I don't care if it's like a 6-episode Netflix series or something, but I legitimately would watch a bunch of that Hawkeye. And I don't really even like Jeremy Renner that much. I just really like that character.
I think it probably has a lot to do with Jeremy Renner. I think he has.
Oh, I like him in this. I'm just saying.
I'm just saying. I think he brings a lot of comfort to that role. And I think he's a guy that's been a character actor for most of his career, and now after the Hurt Locker, he became a leading man. And I think he's got that ability to just be very comfortable in his skin and project that onto his characters. And I think that. Because of that, he's able to kind of be the character of Hawkeye that he is, this guy that he's never wrong. Like he assesses things honestly, and he's cocky, but he's warm, and you understand why he is.
I'm trying to think of what his comic equivalent of him, because that is not the comic book Hawkeye at all.
Right, now in the comic
Hawkeye
like,
is a total screw up, but like this character is basically like, you're right. I mean, he's like sort of the.
It's the heart of the team.
Yeah, that's right. I mean, they kind of lay that out, I guess, in the Age of Ultron scene. But he now, I really like what happens in this movie because I think his appearance and him suddenly showing up, if there's any ambiguity about which team you're supposed to be rooting for here, and there's probably not anyway, but I feel like he really tips the scales.
I mean, I think that's just going that direction real quick. That's one thing they really did well is they, you know, it was hard to pick, you know, which group, you know, was doing the right thing. And that big fight, I'm glad they didn't play up the big fight with the same gravity that they played up the final fight between Captain America and Iron Man, where it was really tooth and claw.
Yeah, they're really trying to hurt each other at the end of the movie.
Yeah, the big fight,
the airport fight, is clearly supposed to just be
It's a pro wrestling
fun.
Match. Yeah, exactly. They're all taking bumps, and it's all in good fun, and it's all there to you know, put on a good show, and that's great.
Yeah,
they break
kayfabe a little bit at one point, too. They're like, you know, they acknowledge, like, I'm not really trying to hurt you.
Yeah, and the end is a shoot, for sure. I may just be a big softy, because there's a softness to the Avengers, the first film, and to that section of this film, where it's just big, bright comic book fun. And I think maybe it's my age or something.
Did it upset you to see mom and dad fighting? Is that what happened?
No, it's just, I'm just asking you. In good conscience, how can you look at Batman v Superman, which is so blown up with its own sense of anger and self-importance and kind of grit and darkness, how can you look at that and kind of think it's silly, and then not look at this, at particularly the last act, and not think kind of the same thing? Like, I feel like the Winter Soldier killed Tony's parents thing is not nearly as contrived and as unnecessary, but almost. It's in the same pond as the. I'm going to spoil Batman v Superman.
Yeah, the mom line. Okay.
Yeah, where you've got this conflict for the whole movie, about Superman being responsible with his powers and Batman trying to bring him to justice, and then all of a sudden, actually, it's about a kidnapping plot, and Superman is real mad. It's not the same thing, because it was set up from the very beginning, like it was set up in a different movie, like you mentioned. But I don't know.
It feels like the last second
they have to fabricate this secondary, well, in really a third motivation for tension. And it's like, what, you never really got to the heart of the first motivation that you set up, that guys are at each other's throats.
I do agree that what basically happens at the end is that it is the motivation for the last fight is not connected to the motivation for the first fight. It's a completely new fight. I guess if I had to stretch, I would say maybe Tony has been, you know, pushed to an edge or a brink of some kind, and that's why it happens more easily. But I think the only real connection is that the villain was so determined to, you know, achieve this end where he gets the Avengers to kill each other, that he had more than one plan in place. That's the only reasonable justification I can give you, is that he had a backup plan, because he was obsessed with making this happen. And the backup plan is the one that worked, basically. And maybe this makes me a sucker, but I didn't feel like it was contrived. In a large part because it was set up in a previous movie, but also because I felt like they really laid the groundwork throughout this entire movie for that to happen, with scenes, not just the scenes that are showing us what happened in the 1991, you know, sequence, but that first scene with Tony, where we're getting a little memory and that he's got this pain associated with his parents and how things ended with them. And lots of mentions of his parents too, a discussion about his father and how he has this strange relationship tied to his father with Captain America. I feel like there was a lot of seeds planted for that. By the way, quick mention, the CGI work of making Robert Downey Jr. look 17 was, I could see somebody being annoyed by that, but it was pretty damn flawless, man. It was really good.
It's still Uncanny Valley, but honestly, I was distracted by it that entire time. But I was like, you know what? Kudos to them for doing
it. They did it in Ant-Man too.
And it worked pretty well there too. Well, I was like, in that scene, I was distracted by it, but I was like, well, you know what? Kudos for them. They're really embracing it. I don't know why they're putting a flashback here, but they're really embracing it. They're doing a long take, and he's like resting in the foreground, and all you're doing is studying his eyes, you know, and you're watching that scene play out through Robert Downey Jr.'s young digital face. And I was like, well, that's, you know, it's not perfect, but they've got some guts to just do that. And then it was revealed to be a simulation, and I was like, oh, well, there's your out right there. Like, that makes sense.
Yeah.
That doesn't look entirely real, and I'm totally okay with it. And you bringing that up does make me buy that ending a little bit more.
I just think that I really understood his, you know, his intensity at that moment. I'm kind of watching that scene play out, and, you know, you have a feeling of where it's going, obviously, but I think it gives you enough time to reflect and sit there and go, yeah, like, you know, he's not gonna react rationally here, and it's because we know that he has a lot of stuff wrapped up in that. You know,
and
I mean, it also, by the way, like that whole stuff with Pepper, that's all even in this movie. I mean, it might be in the movie too because they couldn't get Gwyneth Paltrow, but it's all in this movie because it's tied. It's more pain associated with Tony's parents, you know, affecting him now, because basically he's making the same mistakes that his dad made that you know, was going to lead to, you know, that gave him all these issues as a kid. So,
yeah,
I don't know.
And
I guess
this
I think they did a lot of Tony Stark developing to lead to that moment.
I agree. You're right about that. And I probably overlooked that because I was verklempt about them fighting as hard as they were. Is this Robert Downey Jr.'s best performance in a Marvel movie?
Oh, I really think so, because I think that they play off. I mean, Tony Stark to me is like a character that, when I go back and watch those Iron Man movies, I remember walking away from them originally going like, oh, that's really cool. Like, they made a superhero that has all this, like, you know, has all of these, you know, dark issues, even though he's still fun to watch. Like, he's got, I remembered viewing him as like, oh, he's like an alcoholic. And then when I went back and watched him again recently, like, I guess maybe I picked those up somewhere, but they're not from the movie. Like, I don't think they really played up his darker nature in those movies very much. And this movie, you know, old Matt Scalise, the big fan of scream acting, is coming out again. But I think that he, you know, he's dealing with a lot more in this movie. And, like, again, one scene that I kind of keep thinking about over, and which is surprising considering this is a movie with some crazy stuff in it, but there's a scene where he and Cap are just in a conference room, basically, and having a conversation that's like the first big debate about why are you not signing the accord. And I just really, really liked that scene because they were they were being friends, and they were both coming from perfectly good places. And I thought the dialogue, like the way that conversation plays out, is so carefully done to make sure that nobody said anything where they were clearly just like, well, we got to ratchet up the, like, the, you know, intensity of the
relationship. Yeah, I mean,
even they were both like trying not to hurt the other guy the entire conversation. And basically it's just like, you can feel them kind of tiptoeing through it. And I just really, I think that that's another great example in this movie of they never fall into the temptation of making Tony Stark just a blind, unreasonable idiot. You know, until the very end, when he has a very good reason, when he has a very good reason to be irrational at that point.
Yeah, and I mean, even that trailer moment where he says, "I want to punch you in your perfect teeth," like that's played as like a good natured kind of jab. You know, that's not actually the threat that it comes across as in the trailer. Speaking of the trailer, are you at all miffed that? When I first saw that first trailer for Civil War, there's the part where Captain America says, "He's my friend, Tony," and then Tony says, "So was I." And the way he delivered, the take that is in the trailer is not the same take that's in the movie. And because in the trailer, there's like a tinge of like pain to it, where he's like, "Well, what? You don't consider me a friend?" And then in the movie, there's no it's just like, I'm angry. It's pure anger.
I think they did play up his anger in that scene in the end. I mean, I think that
line made me like well up the first time I saw it in the trailer, and then when it happened in the movie, I was like, it just didn't have the same weight, and
it wasn't
nearly as complex.
That last act definitely, I mean, it clearly didn't work for you, I can't sit here and tell you
that might be
part
it.
Of the movie.
I think it might be that it just doesn't wrap up the way that it all led up. Because I can honestly say, like you're saying with that dialogue scene, with basically every dialogue scene in this movie, it's as important as the big punch-em fights, you know. And it's played with as much skill, and almost everything up to the point where. Baron Zemo kind of reveals his plan, and even after that, it all works for me. It just, I think, I don't know.
Well, you know, look,
definitely need to watch it again.
If I had to try and diagnose what's the least effective about that end scene, it is Zemo, and it's because, I mean, look.
Like, how are they going to get that guy to wear a purple napkin on his face?
Yeah.
How are they going to get him there?
But I think that character just that, you know, look, maybe there's a 3-hour cut of this movie somewhere. I don't know. But I think that Zemo did not get enough. I mean, they spent a lot of time, you know, putting Cap and Tony Stark where they needed to be emotionally, and a lot of the other characters too. And I don't think they really did that for us with Zemo. And so, his plan, while it is logically sound to me, I don't really care as much about why he's doing it and what led to that, because he's basically just, you know, he's just a bad guy.
Yeah, and he's damaged. And
Zemo is kind of flat, and I think. That's the fact that is the case. The fact that they didn't develop him as much in this movie, it's probably a big part of why the last last scene, which, you know, relies pretty heavily on Zemo, it's probably why it doesn't play as well. But I again, what happens in that scene between Cap and Tony Stark is very effective for me, and I think. I understand why everybody is where they are at the end of the movie. And I like where everybody is too. I mean, I like that I get your reasoning for not liking it, but I like that status quo. I'm excited about seeing what happens between now and Infinity War with that whole you know, that whole world, that story of, like, these guys are off doing their thing, and Tony Stark is basically the one that's out of the loop, you know? He's been left behind by the group.
But doesn't Captain America in his letter say something like, the Avengers are yours?
No, he basically said, yeah, he said, like, you can call us if you need us, but we're not coming to your,
nice
building.
So, I'm sorry. It sounded like he was saying, you know, you're still the Avengers, and I'm out here doing my thing. And then,
No.
I was a little confused. Maybe I'm wrong.
My impression is that he's taken all those guys with him that he broke out of jail.
I got that too, but I thought he was just breaking them out of jail to be, like, buddies with them, and... And then he was still saying, no, but you still have the Avengers. And it's like Iron Man and War Machine in a wheelchair. And I was like, well, that's kind of mean. Like, you have all the actual Avengers. But okay, no, he was saying that myself and the Avengers are at your disposal, basically.
Yeah,
I
think that Cap is
when Thanos comes and
moonwalks
across.
I think he's claiming
across.
The franchise, you know. Yeah. And he's just basically saying, if you need the Avengers, here's our number, you know?
Got it. So two things. So I think that one of the... I think at a certain point in this movie, I was writing a different movie in my head, and I didn't get that movie. And then when I didn't get it, I felt guilty for wanting it to begin with. So what happened was... There's that part where they reveal the five other Winter's Soldier, that were being created in 1991. And I was like,
yeah, that's all useless.
I was like, ooh, four, five. Oh, my God, yes. Like, Baron Zemo is going to create the Serpent Society. And I was like, oh, they've got the they had the working title, and then they were like, oh, no, it's
yep,
a joke.
Yep.
And I was like, oh, sweet. Like, this is going to end with Zemo recruiting these guys to be his Serpent Society and all this stuff. And then it ends up that he kills them all, and he just has really hurt feelings from the last movie. And I was like, well, I guess that's way more human and, like, grown up, but I kind of really wanted to see the Serpent Society, and now I feel guilty for wanting super-duper crazy comic book stuff in my comic book movie instead of a man mourning his dead daughter and wife and father.
Yes.
You know, like, I was just like, oh, you guys kind of made me feel like a dummy for wanting what you were kind of setting up.
He was trying to commit murder-suicide by superhero, which is a downer of a villain.
It's a bit of a downer. But I did love the moment when Black Panther, you know, takes that away from him and kind of... realizes his own vengeful heart. I thought that was a great moment, and again, I started, like, thinking in my head, oh, the next logical beat is Black Panther interrupting this, like, blood feud fight going on in the next room and, you know, resetting everybody's kind of priorities. And then I guess he just kind of left.
He's had to take Zemo somewhere.
Like,
he's
yeah,
taking him
so.
To justice. Yeah.
Yeah.
No, look,
I don't
this,
know.
This movie
there's...
has the same as a key problem for me. This movie has the same one that pretty much every Marvel movie has had, which is that it does not have a strong villain, and it doesn't really care that it doesn't, because I don't think it's ever really. I don't think this movie and the Russo brothers feel like they wanted to spend much time on that, because I think they're more interested in, especially in this movie where there is actually a conflict between the heroes, I think that's where they wanted to spend all their time. The
yeah,
movie
and
does
that's
suffer
fine
a little
because...
bit from it, but I do wonder, like, eventually, are we going to get a movie where there is a villain that we actually want to spend time with, you know, and that we actually, you know, find interesting. And, you know, Thanos is a great character. I am really curious to see how these two guys, who have made these pretty grounded movies for the most part, I mean, for as grounded as it can be for a movie like this, with a dude who becomes a giant and steps on an airplane. Like, they're going to make a movie next that has an evil purple alien obsessed with death who wants to become all of existence.
Basically. And will do so by donning a Nintendo Power Glove.
So it's a big jump from where we are right now to there. But, you know, they're going to be aided by a bunch of other movies that are going to get us there. And I'm kind of excited to see how that evolves. But, I mean, there's this movie, every time I watch one of their movies, I get, and this one has a moment in it too, where you're watching it play out, and then you have something will pop up, and you'll go like, oh, shit, these are like the guys that made Community. Like, this is Community the movie, but it just has a $300 million budget. But I really think that their understanding of, you know, playing different characters off each other, making, you know, their interest here, honestly, I think is very similar to the way that a good episode of Community plays out, which is that the scenes that you end up getting the most out of are when we take the main characters and bounce them off of each other in interesting combinations and ways. And, you know, the plot as it is, you know, that the actual thing getting you from A to B is definitely secondary to those moments that are revealing of those characters and allow us to sort of explore those characters.
Which is an awful lot like a comic book. So, I mean, I think that they're great, and I think that they continue. I mean, I do lament the loss of the guys that made, you know, the pretty down-to-earth spy action movie that was The Winter Soldier. I know that's not going to happen again. And maybe I just love that movie more than I realized I did. And I was really hoping for more of that here. There are moments of that. The opening action scene, there are so many moments in that. It's just hard to list in terms of like awesome little action beats. And it's a really nice transition.
The tunnel chase scene is awesome too.
All that stuff is fantastic. And it all looks so great. You know, it looks like practical stuff going on there. There's very few obvious CGI stunts. It just looks like real guys out there punching around. I mean, Scarlett Johansson in that coat in the opening, you know, in the opening scene, just like, dropping reverse hurricane ranas on guys. At one point she gives a guy a rock bottom, and then later on in the movie the Winter Soldier power bombs her onto a table. It's I'm choking on the kayfabe.
On your
there's so many great little action moments in there, and I know that those guys are not going to be back for the, like you said, the giant alien invasion movie with the purple alien and
there's no
characters.
Way to do that. There's no way to do that as the people who made Winter Soldier. You know, they're clearly evolving. So they have to do what they're doing.
And with that, I know that I didn't get enough of the World War II Captain America movie that I wanted, and I didn't get enough of the, you know, modern spy thriller Captain America movie that I wanted. And I think I just need to make peace with that, that I got pretty awesome, you know, trips through those worlds. I could take a whole movie trilogy of just Captain America during World War II.
Oh, and, sure, of course.
And I just have to make peace that I'm not going to get that. Just the same way I could watch 7 movies of Christian Bale and Christopher Nolan's Batman. And I think that, honestly, the Nolan Batman...
This is amazing that these things even exist at all.
I know, you're right. I'm being very selfish right now. Going back to the Nolan thing, I do think that is... I think a lot of the people's problems with the Nolan Batman movies, I think that might be my only problem, my only real problem here, where... The people accuse those movies of thinking they're a little bit more important than they are and not embracing the fun. And then this movie does that too. But I think my only argument against that is, well, those movies are fun. They're just fun in their own way. And guess what? They're very tonally consistent, and they all adhere to an internal logic. And I feel like this movie is tonally trying to be at least two different types of movies. You know, there's the awesome Joss Whedon Avengers stuff in the middle, and then there's the gritty, dark Nolan stuff on the outside edges. And that seems very apparent to me. And, I mean, I guess we'll see when I watch this movie another 16 million times what I think after each of those viewings.
Well, look, we went almost an hour when we said we were gonna do a quick review. But,
yeah, clearly I don't have very many thoughts about this movie that I hate so much.
Yeah, so
I mean, real quick,
what's your
rating, and then where does it rank in the Marvel canon? And I know that this is a stupid question that will change literally 5 minutes after you hang up the phone.
I mean, I feel like talking about it with you has both brought up issues that I have with it, and then as we've talked about it, I've already worked through them and I'm fine with it. So I'm like, even seeing it for its flaws, I still think right now this is way up there for me. I mean, I think this is a better movie than Age of Ultron, and I put this up. I mean, the only thing that's immediately jumping out to me as a better movie in the Marvel series to me is Guardians of the Galaxy, which is still the one that I think is the gold standard and just can't be topped, and it's sort of perfect all the way through. But this is way up there for me, and just mostly because it has so much in it that I love. And I'll totally grant that at least two of those things that I love are basically, you know, they're things that I love a little bit more because I know I'm going to get a whole movie of them soon too. So I can't view it in a vacuum. You know, I could try to do that, but I can't just sit here and pretend that I'm watching this movie with no knowledge that there are sort of implications of, like, that when you watch this movie, it's making you have these moments of like, oh yeah, there's another one that, like, we're going to get a whole movie of this, you know, like, I can't separate it from that. So that's a part of the experience. And, you know, for me, it improves the whole thing. But, you know, I think the experience is so positive for me. I mean, it's, I don't know what rating to give it, but very high.
Or to be specific. No, and yeah. I certainly don't want to sound like I'm trying to rain on the parade, because there's nothing I wanted more than to come into the conversation and just praise to high heavens everything about this movie. But I do think, I mean, I think this is me kind of dealing with the fact that my candy is trying to become vegetables in a way, and I think that needs to happen. You know, you can't just make a 15 movie franchise and have it all be fluff. Although Fast and Furious is working real hard at that. And I think that, I mean, my favorite of all of these movies is Avengers, and I feel like that is the fluffiest movie out of all of them as well. And that's kind of what I always liked about the Marvel Cinematic Universe. You know, Iron Man is just great pop entertainment, and it's very simple and it's very self-contained. And that's not what this is, and that's okay, and I'm okay with that. So I think I like walking out of the theater, I think I would give it a 7 out of 10, which is a pretty high rating. And but for the Marvel movies, it puts it kind of right there in the middle. But then once I put it up against those other Marvel movies, I ask myself, I mean, I think it is a better film than Ant-Man or Captain America, the First Avenger. So, it may end up in my top five. It may end up as my favorite of all these movies, because clearly it's a complex enough movie that it's worth talking about. And I think that at the end of the day is the most important thing. And like you said,
I mean, you kind of dogged the plot a little bit ago, but really the plot is, it's nothing revolutionary, but it is extremely well plotted out and very tightly constructed. You know, I mean, there's everything makes solid sense and follows a logical path, and things are nicely set up. So it's hard to knock the movie on any real technical level. I think it might just come down to personal preference. Are you going to see it again in the theater?
I think I probably will. Yeah. I mean, not in the immediate future, because I need to give Francesca an opportunity to see it too. But I will probably see it, you know, at some point again before it leaves theaters.
Yeah, my wife didn't get to see it with me, so I would like to go see it again soon, and I may do that. And you know what? After that movie, maybe I can just put a different hat on, and we can have another review where it's just me freaking out about how great it is. We'll see.
All right. Well, thanks for chatting about it for a good. This is a good, healthy conversation for both of us, I think.
Yeah, I think I worked out a lot. I'm gonna go, you know, weep silently in the bathroom for the rest
of the
evening.
For more Film Nerds Unlimited, go to filmnerds.com or find us on Facebook and Twitter. If you like what you hear, rate and review our podcast on iTunes. Keep an eye out for the next issue of Film Nerds Unlimited, coming soon.